This podcast is an unedited excerpt from an MCLE program presented at MCLE's Conference Center in Boston, Massachusetts. Please note that MCLE's products, services, and communications are offered solely as an aid to developing and maintaining professional competence. The statements in this recording may not apply to your circumstances, and no legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice is being rendered by MCLE or its speakers. For full terms and conditions, please see the MCLE website.
So now that we've gone over the different trustee options, in advising your client, helping your client decide who they want to name as trustee, I think we were thinking about sort of the initial trustee, sort of had the initial trustee in mind as we went through these options. But it's important, as Courtney said earlier, trustee succession planning is important. So you should help your client think about who they want to serve as trustee if that initial trustee is not available. If the initial trustee has resigned or died, has become incapacitated, or has been removed. And then you might also help your client think about who should be the successor to that successor trustee. So this is really the process of trustee succession planning. And it's important because it gives your client greater control over who the trustees will be in the future. Again, this is especially important for trusts that are structured to continue for the beneficiary's lifetime and or multiple generations. So when that planning is done in advance, typically allows for a more efficient transition process from one trustee to the next. And it typically avoids a need for the court to be involved in that transition process. So mechanically, how will this succession plan be implemented? Where should the succession plan actually reside? So it's going to be part of the trust, going to be drafted in the trust instrument. So typically in a trust instrument, the grantor is going to name several trustees in successive order. So brother could be the initial trustee, and if brother can't serve, then sister will serve, and if sister can't serve, uncle serves. But your client should also think about, what would happen if sister, brother, and uncle, all of the people named in the trust as successor trustees are not available, but there's still property left in the trust. So your client should include at least one mechanism for appointing further trustees in that scenario. So thinking about when that list of named trustees has been exhausted. And some typical options that we see is that the grantor, while living, would be able to appoint a successor trustee. And if the grantor is not living, then surviving spouse while living could appoint that successor trustee. Another option would be after the grantor and spouse are deceased, the adult beneficiaries of the trust can fill that vacancy by appointing a successor trustee. Another common option is that the departing trustee may have the authority to appoint his or her successor. But it's important to realize that this could fall short. So typically when you see this in a trust, it's not going to be the only mechanism for appointing a successor trustee. Because if we think about, a trustee is no longer serving because they're incapacitated or deceased, in that case, they can't appoint their successor. Or what if the trustee resigned, but just never took the time to appoint their successor? So help your client think about including another mechanism in addition to that. Another common option is to have a law firm or an accounting firm. Usually this will be a committee of shareholders or partners in that firm, giving them the authority to appoint a successor trustee to fill a vacancy. And then your client can place restrictions on that ability to appoint a successor trustee. So your client could require that the appointed successor trustee be a corporate trustee and not an individual trustee. So this gives your client a little bit more control there because they understand that whoever is being named as a trustee, you know, way into the future down the road, that this is going to be, you know, an institution that has experience, has the resources. So, you know, corporate trustee, professional individual trustee, as opposed to an individual trustee who is not working as a professional trustee. You know, that's not something that they're doing regularly. And succession planning should also consider how a trustee might leave that job. So, you know, working with your client to develop a mechanism for trustee resignation and trustee removal. That's going to allow for more flexibility and more efficiency. It usually makes sense to give trustees the ability to unilaterally decide to resign as trustee. So the trustee, if they're looking to resign, they're going to look to the trust instrument for the process to resign. And if the trust instrument is silent, then they're going to look to state law. But typically the requirement will be that the resigning trustee just notify the beneficiaries, possibly notify any of the trustees, co-trustees of their resignation. And with respect to, you know, trustee removal, your client may say, hey, I like the people I've named as trustees, and I don't want them to ever be removed. But your client should keep in mind that adding a mechanism for trustee removal provides flexibility. And under state law, even if the trust is silent, someone may be able to remove a trustee anyway. Usually it requires a court proceeding in that case. So working with your client to develop a mechanism for removal that works for them, this is going to give the grantor control over that process and possibly allow the trust to avoid a costly court proceeding. And you know, the grantor of the trust, they can decide who's going to have the authority to remove. So you typically might see is that the grantor during their life will have the ability to remove a trustee, then perhaps the spouse, then adult beneficiaries. And the grantor can decide whether they want that right to remove to be unlimited. So trustee can be removed with or without cause. So the trustee doesn't have to do anything to be removed. Or the grantor may provide that the removal power is limited to only being able to be done with cause. So if the trustee has breached a duty. So that is all I have for, you know, as far as succession planning for trustees. So I know we left a little bit of time for questions. And it doesn't look like any have come in. Is that what you see on your end, Courtney?
Yes, no questions yet. And I think I'll just add, if we're waiting for, see if anyone has any questions, sort of to echo everything that Christina said about succession planning. It's those sort of appointment and removal provisions are really important because, as Christina said, the grantor can sort of set the rules of the road as to who can be appointed. But by allowing removal and resignation, the beneficiaries aren't going to be stuck with a trustee who maybe is not the right fit and not responsive. So there's a lot of flexibility in there for the beneficiaries as well, especially after maybe the grantor has died and is no longer sort of able to be involved in appointing and removing.
Right. Thank you, Courtney.
So if we don't have any questions, we can give it another minute, but we really appreciate everyone spending their Friday lunch hour with us and hearing about trustee duties and responsibilities. And this is our contact information. If anyone has questions after the fact that you think of, please feel free to reach out. We are very happy to answer any questions after the fact. Okay, it doesn't look like we have any questions, so.
All right.
Well, thank you, everyone. Have a great weekend.